Hello and welcome to the Becoming Podcast. I am your host, Anne Fancy, and I am really, really grateful you're here. This podcast is a place where deep, raw, and vulnerable conversation is commonplace. We're here to help illuminate the collective consciousness, to get really thinking deeply about how we live and whether or not that is in alignment with who we are, with our soul's deepest intent and highest path. I hope these conversations stir you to contemplate your own life, to help you step forward into a braver and brighter version of you. And I hope that you can see and hear that this is not always an easy, light-filled, or direct path, but often it's winding, and the shadows and challenges that we face allow us not only to build strength, but to help us really, truly forge ahead into the highest and best path for you. Again, I'm just so grateful you are here. And if you are enjoying this podcast, I would so appreciate that you rate it and subscribe. And of course, share it with others who you think would resonate with what we talk about in this space. If you're looking to join me in conversation and be part of a community, I did start a Facebook group called the Becoming Community, and I'd love to have you in there and keep these conversations going in a different forum. Thank you again for listening and sharing and subscribing. Let's get to today's episode. Hello. Today we will be soon talking with Elizabeth Atkins, who has an absolutely fascinating story. The story of her parents reads like a novel. And Elizabeth is a novelist herself, an inspired human and fascinating person. So I think you'll really enjoy the story that she has to share with us today. Also, I want to let you know before we get going about a couple of things that are coming up in 2020. First and foremost, on January 11th, 1/11, I am teaching Class and a Glass at Urban Rest Brewery in Ferndale at 10 a.m. And at 11 a.m., I will be doing with some friends a little health and wellness, essential oil, CBD, crystal jewelry, roller bottle making fun. So come join us right after. That'll be at start at 11 a.m. if you're not into yoga, kombucha, or beer. They're also serving cider and things of that nature. In April at Citizen Yoga, I am teaching continuing ed. This is for teacher trainers, people who are enrolled in a 300-hour program looking for more continuing ed, as well as people just working to advance their practice or expand their teaching experience. I will be teaching specifically to how to become a more impactful teacher, how to allow your classes to really reach the student body in a different way. And with that, of course, more organic growth. So we will talk about messaging, understanding your own divine purpose and alignment and what matters to you, and how to show up in our lives with more impact. And we'll, of course, do class design and things of that nature as well. But all are welcome for that. And lastly, and almost most excitingly, I have agreed to teach in Costa Rica for the Citizen Yoga Costa Rica retreat, May 9th to the 16th. I'll be co-leading with Lauren Ladotti, and it is sure to be a great time. So check that out at citizenyogastudio.com as well. All right, enough. Let's get going. All right, welcome. I'm here with Elizabeth Atkins, and she's going to tell us all about who she is and her journey. And she just, we were just talking off mic, and she was saying she already knows, you know, her divine mission. And I think it's such a beautiful place to start. So first, welcome.
Thank you, Anne, for having me. Of course. So excited.
Good. So divine mission, that's a pretty big and bold statement.
Yeah.
What is your divine mission? And then let's unpack it.
My mission was really sort of anointed on me when I was born. Mm-hmm. My father was a Roman Catholic priest who left the church during the 60s. Mm. He was 44 and white. Mm. My mother was 19, African American and half Italian, and she'd been through her own traumas. And they married 25 years apart, interracial. Mm. Interracial marriage was still illegal in 19 states when they married.
Wow.
Caused a huge scandal. The bishop told them they were going to hell.
Of course. Yeah.
And then I come along, mm-hmm. and my father baptized me in the hospital room, and he asked God to make me a princess of peace.
Mm.
Now, this was 13, 12 days before the Detroit riot.
Wow.
The insurrection happened here, mm-hmm. and the Watts and Newark riots were occurring in that same time period.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. as was the Summer of Love, the sort of hippie love-in in San Francisco. Sure.
Yeah.
So I was born amidst this literal gunfire, flames, and love-ins yeah. with hippies.
Yeah.
Which was all about peace and love.
Uh-huh.
And so then adding complicated layers to it, mm-hmm. I look white.
Yeah.
So I don't look like the typical Halle Berry or Barack Obama biracial sure. person.
Right.
So why was I made this way?
Mm-hmm.
And why was I brought into the world at this time?
Yeah.
I didn't learn that my father made this prayer about me being a princess of peace until I was 35, wow. reading his journals about it.
Wow.
Because he journaled every day about his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, I was about to go through a divorce that mm-hmm. was extremely difficult for the next 16 years. Wow. I had 4 restraining orders against my ex-husband, and it was horrible. And I really went through a lot. And mm-hmm. prior to that, I had struggled to figure out, what is my racial identity?
Sure.
Am I black? Am I white? Am I mixed? Mm-hmm. What?
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to the conclusion that those are all labels, because spirit is invisible.
Yeah.
So I want people to see my, feel my spirit before they see me.
Right.
And then they see me, and then it forces them to figure out, well, why does race matter so much?
Mm-hmm.
If I liked her before I knew she was black,
right.
then why don't I like her now, or vice versa?
Right. Yeah.
And that's happened. And instead of get angry at people who raise those questions, mm-hmm. I use it as a teaching moment. Why does it matter so much?
Mm-hmm.
If you liked me before, and mm-hmm. then I told you my identity, and this really happens.
It's so crazy to me.
Isn't it dumb?
It's so dumb. It's like, I like can't even wrap my head around that. Like, who gives a shit, right?
Exactly.
And it's fascinating, because I know you talk a lot. I want to back up a little bit, but while we're here, you talk a lot about this idea of colorblind, and this is a thing people talk about, right? And so what's your position on that? Because, you know, people will say, you know, oh, I don't see color, which is also bullshit, right? Like,
yeah.
we see color. Like, yes. that, like, we all see in color.
We so do.
Even if you're colorblind, literally, you uh-huh. still see color. They're just not the same. So right. what's your, how do you feel about that whole commentary, and people think that we're doing the right thing by saying we're colorblind, but that's a miss? Like, where do you fall in all of that?
I think that people who say it have good intentions.
Yeah.
And that's great. But I don't want someone to negate my life history and identity mm-hmm. and culture yeah. that might be reflected in my skin tone.
Sure.
Because it is real.
Yeah.
It's yeah. very real. And so to say color, I say colorblind love about my parents.
Yeah.
Because love doesn't have a color.
Right. Right.
But if you say I don't see color to mm-hmm. someone who's a person of color,
yeah.
that you're saying I'm not really seeing you.
Right. Right. It's diminishing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so fascinating, because it's almost as if you are constantly this fly on the wall mm-hmm. hearing about people talk about race and
yeah.
And assuming that you aren't of it. Right.
Yes. Yes.
And uh-huh. then you have to learn how to manage that. So it sounds really, I mean, it's really beautiful that you get this great teaching moment.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I bet that was painful at times.
It was really difficult, because you don't know where you fit in. And also, we live in a very different world now than when I grew up. And
sure.
my sister, who, she's got brown hair, blue eyes, and white skin, and mm-hmm. freckles.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no Halle Berry. There was yeah. no Mariah Carey, Derek Jeter, Tiger Woods. There were no role models mm-hmm. to show other people who were mixed.
Yeah.
And there especially weren't who looked white like us.
Yeah.
So we really just had to figure out who we are. We
mm-hmm.
both became writers
mm-hmm.
because that enabled us to first vent our feelings in journals.
Yeah.
And secondly, to write ourselves into American history, American mm. culture and literature.
Mm-hmm.
So she wrote 3 young adult novels about being a biracial girl.
Mm.
And I wrote 3 women's fiction novels about being, about biracial characters
mm-hmm.
making a difference.
Yeah. So growing up, what was your mother like, and how did she own her ethnicity, her race, her culture?
Right. So she was adopted by a black family because her Italian mother's family said there will be no N-words in
yeah.
our family.
Ugh.
So she was adopted by a black family, so that became her identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so she told us there would be people who wouldn't like us because of our background, mm-hmm. and that made us tougher. It didn't make it easier to accept when it happened. Mm-hmm. And a lot of incidents as while dating, mm-hmm. where guys would find out about my mother and no longer call me or actually use a racial slur. Mm-hmm. And so that was difficult. Mm-hmm. But our parents demonstrated love. Mm-hmm. Like we lived in communities that were diverse. Mm-hmm. We had friends who were Chaldean, Jewish, Asian, Black, White, mm-hmm. Russian, everybody.
Yeah.
And so they showed by example that we're all human and that we all deserve love and kindness.
Sure. Sure. So your dad left the church.
Uh-huh.
That, I bet that was a huge thing. How did he end up being a priest in the first place? How was that call to him? And mm-hmm. then has he described what it was like to make the decision to leave?
Yeah, he died in 1990, but I feel him very strongly in spirit. Mm-hmm. His brother was in the seminary, mm-hmm. George. And back then, this was in the 30s, it was very powerful and prominent for a family to have a son who was a priest. Mm. And so he was in the seminary, but he got drafted into the Marines in World War II. Mm. He disappeared at the Battle of Tarawa.
Okay.
And so my grandfather told my father, you're going to the seminary.
So it wasn't his choice, really.
No choice. Mm. So he became a priest for 15 years, but he really wanted a family. Mm-hmm. And so he met my mother. She was the organist, and it wasn't, you know, scurrilous.
Yeah.
He left the church first. In fact, she tried to convince him to stay because nobody did that.
Yeah.
And yeah. So his family was very, very disappointed, and sure. his mother wouldn't even speak to him.
Wow.
But then when I was one or almost one, they took me to her house, and I broke the ice, and I became that princess of peace, crawling across the floor, uh-huh. climbing up on her lap, making her smile. Mm-hmm. And now we have beautiful harmony with my father's side of the family, nice. All my cousins.
Yeah. So were you raised in the church then, or did he really leave the church after that?
No, they continued to practice Catholicism, mm-hmm. and they also believed they were going to hell because of the bishop's words.
Yeah.
My sister and I, as a result, thought that was the dumbest thing ever, and we totally rejected Catholicism.
I love that. Yeah.
Right. And I also, when I got to college and took women's studies classes and mm-hmm. learned about the patriarchal society and religions that we have, I was so enraged, mm-hmm. and I hated the virgin whore, yeah. Madonna whore scale.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it makes me so angry.
Yeah.
And so I just couldn't vibe with those religious beliefs. Women can't be priests. And
yeah.
So we were taken to church. Mm-hmm. We were respectful, and we have a very strong relationship with God. Mm-hmm. There's no disrespect, mm-hmm. but we didn't call ourselves Catholic. In fact, we both thought we were Jewish.
Interesting.
Because we lived in Oak Park, Michigan, oh, which is highly yeah, Jewish at yeah. the time. And so we would go celebrate Passover with our friends. Mm-hmm. Our father wore a Star of David, a jade Star of David necklace, which is a symbol of the sure. Jewish faith. Mm-hmm. And then he also wore a Thunderbird turquoise belt buckle because he was president of the Saginaw Valley Indian Association because
okay.
he's part Native American.
Oh my gosh.
So, and then he's a former Catholic priest.
Right. Oh my
and
gosh.
And then there was a young man who he sort of adopted who's Chaldean. Mm-hmm. It was just, it's everybody.
Yeah. Talk about like the mixing pot, you know?
Yeah.
That's so awesome. I love all of that, that they were intentional. It sounds like they were really intentional in creating a community that they knew would do its best to support you girls growing
yes,
up.
Absolutely.
Like that seemed very intentional and mm-hmm. wise. Mm-hmm. What before your father died, what was his position on faith? Did he remain very connected to Catholicism? How did the Cherokee influence come into play? Like how did he reconcile those different places and pieces of himself?
Uh-huh. He had a very strong connection to God. Mm-hmm. He was still Catholic. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be a laicized priest, which is like a citizen priest.
Okay.
He wrote to the bishop way back when.
Yeah.
It never happened. Mm-hmm. He really wanted to pioneer new ground for the church, which still has not budged.
Yeah.
So I don't know that he ever reconciled it all, because mm-hmm. he really believed that the whole celibacy vow was a man-made construct.
Yeah.
As was the... And it was rooted in money.
Sure.
Because way back in centuries ago, when priests could marry, they would get a plot of land. And when the priest died, the wife got it. Oh. And that was less property for the church.
Mm.
And so being unable to marry.
Was control and power, as always, right?
Yes.
Right. Yes. Oh, it's so interesting. So when you describe God, what is your understanding of God? How do you describe God?
I believe that God is the spark of light that's inside of us, the electricity that keeps our heart beating.
Okay.
It's our spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we're all pieces of God, like our solar plexus chakra at our core mm-hmm. is like the sun, and that's God energy. In meditation, I was shown that it's like this ball of yellow light coming at our core and coming inside us and exploding inside us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our spirit.
Okay.
Which is God.
Mm-hmm.
And I also believe that our life mission is, our assignment is to activate that energy by becoming aware that it's there
mm-hmm.
and practicing a lifestyle in mind, body, and spirit that awakens it
mm.
and activates it
mm-hmm.
so we can share it.
Mm-hmm.
And it heals us, it empowers us, it energizes us, it guides us in mm-hmm. every way.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get to this understanding of God? I know that you've said you weren't connected to the church and it didn't make sense to you, but mm-hmm. what did all that look like and your own healing? Because you mentioned that you had some real struggles. I guess, let me back up one stop. Were the real struggles born of this identity crisis, do you feel, like as a child?
It was all intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
When I was little, I read The Exorcist.
Mm.
I watched Amityville Horror.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lived in a house when I was little that was actually haunted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my mm-hmm. father did an exorcism.
Mm.
And the stuff stopped happening. So reading The Exorcist
mm-hmm.
and Amityville Horror,
mm-hmm.
I believed in demonic energy.
Mm.
And at the same time, I believed in God.
Mm-hmm.
My concept of God was just what I'd learned at church. It was more like a feeling
mm-hmm.
of God. I didn't have any connection to Jesus. Zero.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't vibe with the Jesus story.
Yeah. I always had the same experience. It's interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. That I always thought, I don't know, that just something felt disconnected to me about it, you mm-hmm. know? And I was like, I can get behind this God concept and this bigger energy concept. Not a personification version, though.
Uh-huh.
Never felt like that. But I always felt like, I don't know about this Jesus thing, you know? uh-huh. Something felt off, and I just knew that. And I think sounds like you were the same. Sensitive kids, and just there was a lack of logic,
yeah,
you know? And uh-huh. and then it just didn't, beyond logic, it just didn't feel right in my body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Go on. So,
my father was really into Edgar Cayce.
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
Your dad, I wish your dad was here because I want to meet him. He sounds fascinating. I'd interview him too.
Totally
so your dad Edgar Cayce was obsessed with the Bible, so I guess that like made it okay?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, my father was totally into telepathy and ESP, and we'd be at the grocery store and he was very intuitive.
Yeah.
He would start telling me stories about the people in line at the grocery store, like he just knew stuff.
Wow.
And yeah, so he was really into that.
Yeah.
And he would tell me and my sister about it. And we'd go camping a lot up north because our mother went to law school at night when we were in third, fourth grade.
Wow.
And so they worked full time and he became Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
And he would cook and take us camping on the weekends so that mm-hmm. she could study. And she mm. ultimately became chief judge of Detroit's 36th District Court.
Wow.
But he didn't get to see her do that.
Mm.
But meanwhile, he talked to us about telepathy and mm-hmm. stuff. So when I was older, I really wanted to cultivate that power. And I read different books. And he was already in spirit form.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing worked. And I really, really wanted to learn.
Yeah.
So my mother was renewing her driver's license at the Secretary of State. And mm-hmm. there was this Hindu man in line.
Mm-hmm.
And he just started talking.
Mm-hmm.
They became friends. He invited us to dinners with the family where they had music and prayer and Hindu ceremonies.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And then they invited us to their home near Washington, D.C. His mm-hmm. name's Dr. Rama.
Okay.
And he's a Hare Krishna Hindu.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know anything about any of that.
Yeah.
But they invited us, and he has a meditation room.
Okay.
And he started talking about reincarnation and
yeah.
all these spiritual concepts and vegetarianism.
Mm-hmm.
And so he taught me how to meditate. Mm-hmm. Very simple technique. I call it sitting with Om.
Yeah.
You just sit with your legs crossed and close your eyes and say Om over and over.
Yeah.
I did it every night for a year. Mm-hmm. And I started to see and feel and know things, mm-hmm. like psychically.
Yeah.
It blew my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year into that, mm-hmm. Someone, my friend, introduced me to Lori Lipton.
Mm-hmm.
And I took Lori's Intuitive Empowerment Weekend.
Okay.
And I learned how to do shamanic journeying, mm-hmm. how to clear my chakras, mm-hmm. and other practices.
How long ago was that?
That was in November of 2011, so okay. That's 8 years ago.
Okay.
And that transformed my life.
Yeah.
When I started doing shamanic journeys, mm-hmm. chakra clearing on top of what Dr. Rama had taught me,
mm-hmm.
Healing yeah. my body, my mind, my spirit, mm-hmm. overcoming the fears that I'd had,
mm-hmm.
Finding peace mm-hmm. amidst the struggles I had with my ex-husband, and ultimately I saved his life later because he was near death after a stroke, and I forgave him. I mm-hmm. never understood forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
I forgave him. And now we have a beautiful friendship.
Wow.
As co-parents. Our yeah. son's 21 now.
Okay.
But harmony matters. It's really great. It's yeah. a miracle, actually.
Yeah.
It's a miracle.
So when did your mom encounter Dr. Rama? What time period was that?
It was probably around 2005.
Okay. So you were spending 5-6 years just meditating the one way you were taught and just waking up that intuition in that way.
Yeah, that was yeah. in 2010.
That he taught you that. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's interesting. I was imagining you were a child then, but you were not. You were a young, no. You were an adult. And yeah.
As a child, I was so terrified of supernatural stuff. Mm-hmm. It's in my book. I would go to bed at night and remember parts of The Exorcist where she's levitating over the bed, mm-hmm. and doors are slamming, and mm-hmm. there's wind, and it's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the Oakland County child killer was at large.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And in communities near ours, mm-hmm. we were in Oakland County,
mm-hmm.
and kids our age were disappearing and being killed. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a scary time. And yeah. then I read about John Wayne Gacy in Chicago killing boys.
Yeah.
And I felt like the world was such a dangerous place, yeah. not only in the physical, but in the spiritual.
Yeah. Because you now knew, because you had experienced that through your books, mm-hmm. and then you were seeing it in real life. Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's so interesting. I have not talked to someone who has. I had a very similar experience as a little kid. I was deathly afraid of, it's a funny way to say that, but of ghosts and aliens and things like that. And there were a couple murders, and I grew up in Oakland County too, and in the neighborhood, not in the neighborhood, but in the city I grew up in, and I was absolutely terrified of things my entire childhood from 3 on. And I think that much of my fear of ghosts came from a haunted house that I was born into before the age of 3.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Terrible things happened at this house. It was like one of the only houses in the area to survive a battle between the Indians and the colonists. And there was all kinds of maiming and all of these terrible things. And the oldest daughter was stolen. And it's this like fantastical story. And I was born into that house. And I only got it validated a couple years ago that house was haunted by an aunt that I have out east. And I just think that something like that happened to me, and I was a sensitive, awake little soul, and I went, whoop, you know, walls up, and I was scared, you know, the rest of my, and so I think of my adult life now as really unpacking my sensitivity and removing that fear, but I was the same thing. I was scared of Mary, you know, they told us a story that whatever her name was, Mary,
Mary
if you said
Lou.
If you say her name in the mirror, that she was going to come to the mirror. I had my parents take mirrors out of my bedroom. You know, I was absolutely terrified. I think because I was so sensitive and I felt things I couldn't understand.
Right.
Nobody taught me any language about it.
No.
And all I saw and felt was what the world was scary.
Yes.
So this is so interesting. I've never talked to somebody who's had such a similar experience as a
wow.
child. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Sorry, I just went off on that one for you guys.
Love it.
Yeah, but I think that it's like a very similar path. Like you and I probably both were very sensitive and intuitive by nature.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, the world sort of, for me, it turned into debilitating anxiety and then mm-hmm. later disordered eating too in different ways. So tell me, how did that play out? All of that fear, how did you choose to numb and survive as a teen and young adult?
Oh, food was my definite drug of choice.
Yeah.
Sugar. I would just eat.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a chubby girl. Well, I wanted to eat everything in sight for as long as I could remember. Mm. And I just wanted to eat. So I would gain weight. I was chubby. And mm-hmm. then I started dieting when I was 11.
Yeah.
I would starve myself all day, yep. lose 20, 30 pounds, stuff myself, gain it all back and more.
Sure.
And so not only does that wreak havoc on your body mm-hmm. as a growing girl eating 300 calories a day and sure. eating 3,000 calories a day.
Yeah.
But it really messes up the mental relationship with food.
Yeah.
Really awful.
Yep.
And so I struggled with that through my teens. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I was never able to make myself throw up.
Yeah.
I tried really hard.
Yeah.
I think I would not be here if I had succeeded. Mm-hmm. It would have ruined. It would have killed me.
Mm-hmm.
And then so laxatives worked.
Yeah.
And so in college, that was my thing. It was mm-hmm. like pizza, ice cream. Oh, bye.
Yep. Yeah.
And I was so deep into it. I knew it was wrong. I knew it was bad.
Yeah.
But I couldn't
stop.
I was finally winning the mm-hmm. food fight mm-hmm. with my body.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, then I almost fainted once.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, God, please, I will never do this again. I was laying on the bathroom floor mm-hmm. and I haven't done it again.
Mm. So. Wow. So how did you heal that relationship with food? How did that happen for you?
It was through meditation.
Mm.
Well, it started with journaling.
Mm-hmm.
When I had my son, I gained 70 pounds when I was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And my first book was coming out 3 months later, and I felt awful. So I proceeded to go on a regular diet, no mm-hmm. pills, no surgery, just diet and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a C-section, so I had to take it easy. But I journaled my feelings instead of stuffing them down with food.
Mm. Brilliant, right? I mean, it seems so obvious and easy, except for that it isn't, right? Because
right?
you spent your whole life not listening to your feelings, so to suddenly give them permission to exist is a huge shift.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you allowed yourself to journal, which mm-hmm. was teaching you to have a feeling and let it be, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then what?
So that was successful
mm-hmm.
because it enabled me to lose the weight.
Mm-hmm.
And within a year, I had lost 100 pounds
mm.
and I felt great.
Mm-hmm.
And then ultimately, I was on Oprah
mm.
on a weight loss success show and mm. they actually showed me journaling.
Mm.
So I later created something called Power Journal, which is a workbook on Amazon and
mm-hmm.
a power journal for weight loss also.
Mm-hmm.
Which is combining meditation and journaling because mm-hmm. that's what really, really healed me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say that in the meditation, I started to connect with spiritual beings,
mm-hmm.
one of whom was Jesus.
Mm.
And it wasn't the Jesus in church.
Sure.
It was this loving being for all.
Mm-hmm.
And when the feeling came, all of those feelings I expressed earlier mm-hmm. went away
mm-hmm.
because this was the most amazing sense of comfort and love
mm-hmm.
I'd ever felt. And mm-hmm. it wasn't even in the physical world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so interesting. I talk all the time in teaching and yoga because my journey has been very similar around food. And I actually am always really apprehensive to even talk about food and body on the podcast because it's so easily just one more place that we numb out whether we're controlling or not controlling. And I think we give food and body so much power in this world, and I hate that, right,
yeah.
personally. And I feel like if you're living in a larger frame and you're content and you're happy and you're healthy and you're doing what's right for you, like I don't ever want there to feel like there's judgment and that weight loss is to glorify weight loss in any way, right?
Mm.
Because I think being healthy is one thing, and then like this obsession is mm-hmm. such another thing. And so I'm really aware of how I want to say this, all of this. I had very similar experiences again, which is very interesting.
Wow.
And that I found that dieting and food and eating or not eating was completely my drug of choice, whichever side of the coin I was falling on at any given time. And becoming a mother was the thing that shifted me.
Oh, wow.
That really, I was starting to break free in my late 20s, early 30s. I could feel that it was shifting. And my biggest regret is how much energy and time I wasted
yes.
putting into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I knew that I was raising a daughter
yeah.
and that
oh.
I didn't want to pass this on because I don't want her to waste decades worrying about this shit that doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
That's
yes.
my true opinion, right? Like,
yes.
so that's why I feel like that's an incredible journey because it led you back. Like, to me, I don't care. Like, yeah, it's wonderful that you lost 100 pounds because 100 pounds is too many extra to have to be healthy, right? But what's more interesting to me is not that you lost the weight, but how you found yourself in that and that you healed and that you connected back to spirit. And I think that's exactly what I've learned too, is that all of that numbing was just me creating me unable to really honor the sensitivity and knowingness I had.
Yes.
Yeah. And yes. That once I started to embrace both the feelings led me back to my truest self, right?
Wow.
And that numbing isn't just food. We do it any exercise.
Yes.
You know, go to any yoga studio or gym and you will find people who are just as obsessed and they appear to be really healthy people, uh-huh. right? But this is the heart of this podcast. Like, how do we bridge whatever way that you've medicated yourself out of connecting, like how do we start to really break through that and look what's underneath it? Because something really powerful is underneath it.
Right. And that's why meditation is the answer.
Yeah.
Because when I started to do this meditation and go within myself, I found all the answers.
Yeah.
And this power that I didn't know I had.
Mm-hmm.
Power to heal myself emotionally, physically, and spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Because I visited the Akashic Records,
mm-hmm.
which is it's like the book of life that contains everything that ever was, is, and will be.
Mm-hmm.
People say, well, where is it?
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the physical realm,
right.
It's in the spirit realm,
yeah.
But we all have access. It's in this universal field of knowledge, and Lori taught me how to go to the Akashic Records.
Yeah.
Lori Lipton. So I would go there and learn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in my past lives, I had been a witch,
mm-hmm.
burned at the stake. That mm-hmm. explained my fear of fire.
Mm-hmm.
I had been starved to death, again, accused of being a storyteller, healer, witch.
Mm-hmm.
And the starvation. And I saw really vivid images of this.
I'm getting chills. And then that's why you had to consume so much in this lifetime, because of that carried memory.
So in the meditation, you can do healings on letting go of that pain from the trauma from past lives.
Yeah.
And that helped me release that need to eat everything. And also, you get guidance when you connect with spirit. Like, praying is looking up and saying, oh, please, please, please.
Mm-hmm.
But meditation is two-way communication where you hear,
mm-hmm.
you hear in your mind through your intuition, your soul, your spirit. You hear guidance,
mm-hmm.
and I started getting this guidance of what to eat and what not to eat.
That would best serve your wellness.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately in 2013,
mm-hmm.
my spirit told me, don't eat meat,
mm-hmm.
don't have sex, meditate, journal, do yoga,
mm-hmm.
write.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raising my son.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. I was like on a retreat from the world for a year.
Yeah.
Strict vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
Meditations that were so vivid and clear because my life was so pure.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I got a lot of downloads about my mission,
mm-hmm.
my purpose, what I'm supposed to do with it, what I'm supposed to write.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so healing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm on a mission to teach as many people how to meditate in a simple manner.
Yeah.
So they can go within. We live in such a noisy world,
mm-hmm.
and it's all externally driven.
Yeah.
Our phones, mm-hmm. apps, all the social media apps are all about external validation.
Yeah.
But the true peace and power come when you connect to the validation of spirit within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll tell you what is your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
What are you supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot cultivate peace and power in the world without having it in yourself first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this begs the question that I like to ask people. What is your definition of purpose? And what do you think that plays out for, like, in the average person?
Mm-hmm. Purpose means doing the best at what you have where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I meet so many people who are so anxious to get to that success destination that they mm-hmm. have in their mind, like it's a faraway place.
Mm-hmm.
But the bounty is in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was raising my son,
mm-hmm.
I had that.
Yeah.
I know lots of moms who have that. Like mm-hmm. they're really impatient to get to this glorious success, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was raising him, I was so cognizant, and spirit told me, enjoy this moment because he's going to grow up and be gone as an adult living his life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's now.
Right.
So I can say in those moments, that was my purpose, being the best mom possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the way I prepared his meals, nurtured him, was there for him. And I'm so grateful.
Yeah. It's honoring the season.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
Yeah. Because I think that's it for so many. Like, I think that I've talked about this a lot on this podcast, but, you know, we imagine that everyone has some overarching purpose that is like, you know, Oprah or writing books or, you know, changing the paradigm on how we understand race and, you know, biracial people, right? Like, you have this big, big agenda, right, as Elizabeth Atkins. And I think people get lost thinking that everyone's is going to feel that big. And right now where you are, it might be a really good parent, or enjoy that career you're in now because it's preparing you. It's giving you some skill set that you'll need later. And sometimes it's maybe just unpacking some of this past life karma and just living better, right?
Yes.
Like, that might be your purpose.
Yes.
Breaking a cycle in your family dynamics and ethnicity and ancestry. Like,
yes.
There's a million big and small ways to live out your purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think you and I have similar missions in that, figure out what the hell's in your way from allowing you to connect to who you are.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've done that on several levels. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
And it takes lots of discipline and work.
Yeah.
And one area where I've had that occur is relationships.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I love relationships. My sister, well, I lose myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have lost myself in the past in relationships.
Yeah.
And being deeply intuitive, it creates this emotional tornado inside me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to pull away and figure myself out. And now I have such peace with that.
Mm-hmm. You feel better prepared for relationships in the future?
I do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I also had to find my voice and be able to speak up. And set boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any of that in the past.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
There's lots of reasons. In this life, I've been the good girl, who gets good grades and has good behavior, and everybody's happy to be around, and she's smiling.
Mm-hmm.
Even when she wants to say fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Anne, on a spiritual level, in past lives, I was killed.
Right, for having an opinion and a voice.
Yeah. Yes, as a woman especially.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I'm sure people who are less into this kind of conversation, let's say, or this is really a new way to look at life, it's hard to hear all that, right? Mm-hmm. And I've heard someone say at some point, like, well, I don't want to help people figure out their past lives because it can easily become a scapegoat for taking personal responsibility in this life. And I think it's really fascinating. I don't necessarily agree, but I think that if you aren't really wanting or willing or ready to do the work it's going to take to unpack your own shit, for lack of a more eloquent word at this moment, but if you're not really willing to do the work of finding greater contentment and stepping into your power and all of these things that we're, you know, meditating or doing whatever it is that's going to allow you to reclaim yourself, then yeah, it can become one more scapegoat too, right?
Yes, yes.
And for people like you and I, it's like, ooh, what else can I understand about myself at a soul level that's going to empower me?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I feel the exact opposite. I'm like, no, this is information
that
empowers me to take charge back, take my power back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's a really interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I did a past life regression with somebody who's trained in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually, she was my money coach.
Mm.
And so the past life regression that I experienced was, I was a nun.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in the 1800s in Scotland.
Mm.
As a nun, I had zero relationship with money.
Mm.
All my needs were met. My shelter, my clothing, my food.
Mm-hmm.
I never went shopping. Mm-hmm. I never paid a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
No relationship.
Yeah.
So the money coach helped me create a more tangible relationship with money, where I would literally hold it and pay for pay for things with cash and understand the physical aspect of money.
Yeah.
It was really powerful.
Yeah.
And I didn't use it as a scapegoat at all. I used it as an empowerment tool.
Yeah.
To understand a history that I had.
Yeah.
That vow of poverty, you have to, in meditation, you have to shatter that vow and step up and out of it. Because those vows that you take that are so deep linger on our energy in this life.
Yeah. Yeah, and we take things with us into this life that we want to heal, right? Like you purposely gather up pieces of lives that both give you the strength or the skill set you'll need, but also carry whatever negativity, weakness, or whatever constructs with it. That's really interesting. I interviewed a woman a couple weeks ago who is similarly a money and business coach, and we had an interesting conversation on spirituality and. And I've been really unpacking that because so often in the world of spirituality, people believe there's this belief that you should not basically be able to ask for money or be abundant in any way, that there's like some disconnect there. I think it's also from our Christian upbringing as well, right? That, but it's definitely rampant in yoga and a lot of the spiritual cultures that or spiritual groups or whatever you want to call it that I'm a part of. And what's so interesting is that in a tribal community, if you were the chief or an elder or the wise woman, all of your needs were met by the community. You got the first choice of meat. You got the first, you know, they took care of your bed. They took care of your making your clothing. Like all, you were getting an energetic exchange. You were served very abundantly by the community and the tribe to meet your needs. But they didn't exchange in money, right? Oh. But we in the West exchange in money. And so we need, nobody's paying for your house just because you're offering this beautiful book to the world, right? Like, and giving it away for free. But we still are like carrying that with us. Like we believe we're spiritual. And if I'm just filling my mission, the universe will supply what I need for me. Well, kind of and maybe, but like not the way that you're, like, it's not that simple anymore. We don't live in a tribal community. We're not taking care of, you know, our beloved friend and teacher, Lori, is not just, like, we're not at her house cooking meals for her because she's a teacher to us. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how it works here. So she has to ask for money for what she does. And we have to ask for money for what we do because that is how energy is exchanged now, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought, I was like, oh, my God, that, like, made it so clear to me. It doesn't mean that we should abuse that exchange either, and that certainly happens in any world, spiritual, religious, or otherwise, right? But that, like, to be aware that, like, we aren't living in a tribal culture anymore where just because you're the wise one, you get...
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Isn't it fascinating to think about it like that? Because that's where a lot of that belief came from, but we don't live in that culture anymore. So we have to figure out how does that work within this culture, you know? And so even, I mean, that's a perfect, the nunnery is an exact replication of that, right?
Yes.
The parishers supported you,
right?
Or parishioners.
Parishioner, yeah.
Parishers. I'm like, something's wrong there on that one. Yeah, the parishioners, yes. I was going to say the parish, but that anyway, yes. My religious know-how language is a little shaky these days. Anyway, that's so fascinating. So what is your recommendation for people who feeling maybe connected to your story and that they relate and they know there's something more? Obviously, you say the same thing I say, which is start meditating.
Yeah.
And if that looks like a physical yoga practice first, that really helped me prepare myself.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely, definitely.
Yeah.
So on Wednesday nights, I do a live guided free meditation on the Zoom app. People all over the country join, and I guide you through it so you don't have to memorize or let your mind wander.
Yeah.
You can just follow it, and that's an introduction. My website is twosisterswriting.com, and people can learn about the meditation there. Or God's Answer is KNOW.com also. But I recommend finding a teacher who can show you how to meditate, and it should be someone that you really vibe with. Same with yoga. You have to love your teacher and really feel safe that they're gently guiding you to learn and not judging or making it a competition. You need really like gentle energy around it.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel comfortable with a certain meditation teacher, don't go with them.
Yeah.
I've heard people describe experiences where there's all these complicated instructions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not.
I know.
It's about getting still.
Yep.
And silent.
Yeah.
And shutting off all the devices.
Yep.
And just going within.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
Shutting out the world for 5 minutes.
Yep.
Once you learn to meditate and you're able to calm the mind, you won't want to come out of the meditation because it feels so euphoric.
Yeah. I've been really feeling this. I've been describing a lot in yoga lately, which is that, you know, if we imagine the inner and outer world as, you know, if we have 100% of attention, like a pie graph, right? We want to start getting that we are at least at 51% of our energy is dedicated to our inner world, our inner knowing. And then if you can expand it beyond that, great. That being said, right, like some people in the spiritual world have gone so far off that to that, you know, that spiritual hierarchy that I think they're 99% in the inner world and only 1% in the outer world. And that isn't a good balance point either.
No.
But, and I think what I mean more is not like go in so deep that you're stuck there, or you're living in a cave and all of that, but that we value our own inner world more so that we can be guided through and by that. And meditation or yoga or Tai Chi or any sort of introspective thing. And meditation isn't so big, bad, and scary. And it's not silencing your mind, which is what everybody thinks.
No, it's not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's just quieting the outer world and its pressure on you. So I feel it like, and allowing yourself to just see what exists within there and not be so afraid of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because I think people are really afraid of what's inside them.
So it's valid, Anne, because we have a lot of traumas inside us that we've never dealt with.
Yeah.
And so when you start to meditate, or personally, I used to see and hear scary things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because my spirit was like vomiting up all this stuff that I'd never dealt with before.
Yep.
So that's part of the process, but I stuck with it, and pretty soon I started to feel really mellow, and I would connect to spirit in a way that I would get visions and hear things and angels and Jesus and my father's spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful and amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it's really important to get some guidance or instruction from someone you trust. Like learning from Lori Lipton and learning from Dr. Rama were such a blessing because they taught actual techniques that worked.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Last thoughts or things on your mission? You want to repeat your mission to us again, your divine mission?
Yeah. Thank you. My divine mission is to cultivate wellness in mind, body, and spirit for myself and others, and to cultivate human harmony through the written and spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
And my target audience is people who want to learn about spirituality, who want to awaken that power and peace within themselves, but they don't know where to start.
Yeah.
So I'm using my life lessons as a curriculum to teach that.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's the heart of this podcast, using other people's lives to help us reflect, like as a mirror, to create, even to see how your own curriculum has unfolded so far.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes,
right? Absolutely. Because isn't that it? It's like there's all these lessons. You're just sharing your lessons from your life in this book so that other people can then learn from them and also look at their own to learn.
Yes. Yeah. So the last section of the book is called Ascend, 8 Steps to an Infinite You.
Mm.
And it's the teaching section, how to meditate, how to clear your chakras, what to eat, how to treat your body as a temple, how to journal to connect to spirit. And so I have an online class called Ascend, 8 Steps to an Infinite You, which is on my website, twosisterswriting.com. So
we'll connect all of that to this. Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
You.
Yeah. Because I think that's the piece. Like, where's the action step? And you've got it right into your book. You know? So action step number one is do something that allows you to strengthen your ability to get quiet and be with yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then seek support.
Yeah.
Awesome. Uh-huh. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this and your time. I love your story. It's fascinating.
Oh, thank you, Anne. Thank you so much.
It's so interesting. Last thought on this is that it's so interesting to me that you and your sister are both writers, because your life story is like a novel of its own, really. You know? Right. I mean, did you just watch Fleabag? Have you watched Fleabag the second season?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay, you got to watch it.
Okay.
Apparently, so does everybody else. I didn't watch the first season, just to be totally honest. I didn't watch it because I didn't know that I wasn't watching it. I thought I was, but I hear the second season is far better. Anyway, watch it. It's relevant for what you're talking about in your life.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Anyway, thank you so much.
And you're welcome, Anne.
We'll connect again soon.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Again, please, please, please share, expand the reach of this podcast. I would so appreciate you doing that and expanding the human beings who are willing to show up and speak and listen and grow and learn so that we can all just keep lighting up the world a little bit more. Again, if you're interested in any of the upcoming events, those will all be posted shortly on my website. I'll also put it in my link tree on Instagram, and I'd love to connect with you outside of this space. So find me, let's connect. And perhaps you're interested in the retreat, in training, in the event on the first. We'll be talking again on that, a little event, the vendor event, about manifesting and expanding our intentions beyond just good ideas. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate you.